Okay. Well, last week we started out with this understanding that Paul is going to contradict the Jewish ideas about sacrifice and salvation, but it's also, in a sense, a common sense approach to atoning for sin. And I say it's common sense because there's just a part of me that says, nobody can atone for my sin but me. Nobody makes me guilty of sin but me. So it's a common sense idea. It's a Jewish idea because this has been the Jewish atonement system ever since the beginning of the atonement system. And so the Apostle Paul has, remember what he said is we passed from that system of righteousness to a righteousness from God. And it's important to understand that those things that were a part of the old system of righteousness aren't a part of the new system of righteousness. And this new system of righteousness is based on what Jesus did. And you see that in all of the therefore arguments that are in the first 11 verses of chapter 11. This section that we're talking about now is not new information. It's an explanation of 1 through 11. And the plan of salvation puts an emphasis on the thing that was accomplished by just one person. And that one person, of course, is Jesus. You see that in the through and by Jesus statements here in chapter 5. It's all over the first 11 verses. And we looked at those last week. So let's continue a little bit. And we'll talk tonight about why that understanding that we spent so much time going through is important to us. So here's the way that we ended last week. When you think about Adam and Eve and their sin in the Garden of Eden, there were two kinds of consequences, right? You had natural consequences and you had legal consequences. The natural consequences, Adam and Eve's eyes were opened. They knew good and evil. We saw that. They experienced shame because they were naked. That just happened because they ate. Spiritually, they lost this wonderful relationship that they'd had with God. God had come down and he'd walked in the garden. And I don't know what that looked like, but he would walk in, was in the habit of walking in the garden in the cool of the day, and Adam and Eve were able to join him, and they carried on the conversation. They had this beautiful relationship. And then when they sinned, Adam and Eve gave that up. They ran and hid when they heard God down in the midst of the garden. It wasn't that God gave it up. They gave it up. And it happened when they sinned. That's what Jesus or what God was talking about in the Godhead when he said, don't eat of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, because in the day that you do, you'll die. The spiritual death, it happened. They're separated from God. Yeah.
And I think it's important to point out between that natural and legal consequences. The spiritual death that Adam and Eve encountered because of that was their spiritual death.
Exactly.
For all mankind death, physical death, not spiritual death. We are not judged by Adam's sin. We have consequences because of the sin. We die because of the sin. But we are not judged by it.
Excellent point. Excellent point. What Adam lost is not going to cost me anything in terms of him losing, him denying his relationship with God. That didn't affect me. That's a natural consequence that happened to Adam. It doesn't extend beyond Adam. Okay? Now, when I sin, I suffer the same natural consequences. But that natural consequence included, and we talked about it last week, included blame shifting. First thing that happened was God said, "Did you eat?" And Adam said, "The woman gave it to me." Well, yeah, I ate, but, and that's almost always what happens when we sin. We fall into this habit of saying, "Yeah, I did it, but." Okay, the legal consequences. These are based on what the judge decides. Okay, you go to court, the judge decides this is the consequence you're going to face. We talked about it for the serpent. We talked about it for the woman, for the seed of woman, and we talked about it for the man. And then there's this consequence that extends to all mankind. And that consequence is death. Now, why did Adam and Eve die physically? Yeah.
God took away their access to the tree of life.
Yes. God takes away the access to the tree of life. It's death because of exile. When Adam and Eve ate of the fruit of the tree, that's not when they died physically. They died physically ultimately because they couldn't get back to the tree of life and eat and live. Okay? So, now, this is what informs Paul's reasoning here in Romans 5 about grace. First thing he says, Adam sinned, right? And as a consequence, death came into the world. It hadn't been there before. It's always dangerous to speculate about what could have happened or what happened before that's not described biblically. But I think I have enough information to say that when God created Adam and Eve, his intention was that they would live forever. They would always have access to the tree of life. Physical death wasn't a part of the original plan. But it came in as a consequence of their sin. That's how death got into the world. It's hard to imagine a human body that wouldn't die, that could constantly be regenerated. And, there's some sense in which you say, well, look at Methuselah, lived 900 years, and it seemed like the longer man lived, the more his body began to be affected by mutations. Mutations very rarely improve the host creature, the host animal or plant. Most mutations cause the plant to die or cause the animal to die. And the more mutations there are, the weaker the host gets, which is in a sense contradictory to the whole tenet of evolution. The longer you go, the more mutations there are, the better the host gets. And that's not generally speaking the case. In fact, we can't think of scientists can't tell you of a case where that happens. Okay, so death comes into the world, and it's death by exile. It's a legal consequence, right? Because God put Adam and Eve out of the garden, they lost access to the tree of life. God put the cherubim with the flaming sword that guarded the way of the tree of life. They could not get back in. Death by exile. So, the Jews had to look at the people to whom Paul is writing, Jews and Gentiles, had to look at the world around them. Death is a fact of life, right? It was a fact then, it's a fact now. Death happened. And it's happened to everyone save two that I can think of. Okay. And that excludes Jesus. It's happened to every man save two. What two would you think of? Who didn't, I'm sorry? Yes. Those are the only two people that didn't die. They just, Enoch, it just says he was no more. Went to be with God. I don't know what happened. And Elijah went up in the fiery chariot. Okay? So death is a fact of life. It's observable. Now, the mistake that they made was death is related to sin, but it's a natural consequence of sin. If it's a natural consequence of sin, what would that mean? Well, it means all men died. That's the fact. But what would it infer if it was a natural consequence of sin? Every man sinned, right? So somehow every man is a sinner because every man is going to die. That's wrong. And the reason it's wrong is they thought that death was a natural consequence. Natural consequences are not extended beyond the person that does it, right? We saw that from what happened in the garden. Only the legal consequences extend. So that was their problem. Now, he says, that's not true. The fact that all men die is a legal consequence, and what it means is all men are accounted sinners. It's the same reasoning process that he uses for grace. Men are accounted righteous because of what somebody else did. So all are accounted as sinners. And how do I know that it's they're accounted as sinners and not that they become sinners? Because it extended to those, this is verse 14, even to those who had not sinned after the similitude of Adam's transgression. So they're not sinners, but they're accounted as sinners. And you can think of people who face death who have never sinned. Right? Who can you think of immediately who faces death but has never sinned so as to incur it as a natural consequence?
Well, the first thing comes to mind is a child, but I also think of people who can't mentally understand that they are violating anything. I think of a person with
right.
Down syndrome or somebody who's so mentally retarded, they don't understand that. They can't commit sin because they don't know the difference.
Right.
So you can't hold that against them.
Right. Babies have never sinned. But they're still facing death. And if you, unless you're very careful, you have to find a way to make them sinners. That's the mistake that's made by people that talk about hereditary sin. We're not hereditary sinners. We're accounted as sinners. This is a problem when you have something that's a fact, and then you reason backwards from the fact, it's easy to run into problems. Okay? And Nolan would be the first to tell you, a person comes into the hospital and they're taking certain drugs. And you know that those drugs are generally prescribed for certain diseases. And so you say, okay, this person has that disease. Maybe not. You can't know that. They might be getting that drug for a totally different reason. And you know, that was something that happened when I was a school psychologist. People would be in my office and I would look at their medical history and I see that they're taking Concerta and I say, oh, okay, they're taking Concerta or they're taking Adderall or some other drug that is typically used to treat ADHD. And I say, oh, they've got ADHD. Might be wrong. You never take the fact and reason backwards. That just, it's the same mistake that Job's three friends made. Job, you're suffering evil consequences. What did you do? You must have done something, Job, or you wouldn't be suffering these consequences. And the apostles of Jesus made the same mistake in John 9. They encountered the man that was blind from birth. They said, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Can't reason backwards. And it's because you miss the distinction between natural and legal consequences when you reason backwards, and you can't always see it. So, death is in the world because of Adam's sin. And the judge decided your sin is going to affect every person who is born. That's a legal consequence. I preached a sermon one time. This was put together as a sermon. It wasn't this detailed. And a little boy came up after I was finished and he said, boy, I wish I could go find Adam and kill him. He brought terrible things into the world. Okay? Now, here's the good news. Yeah, go ahead. Oh, yeah, Eve as well. he just uses Adam as the prototypical man. But you could say Adam and Eve. Yeah, yeah, good point. And I don't mean to, I try to not use the phrase all men die, but I would try to use the phrase all humans die to make sure that it's easily understood that I'm talking about everybody. Yeah. It's not just man. It's man and woman. The Bible uses a really interesting phrase for that. They say, everyone born of a woman. And you can't get here unless you're born of a woman, except for Jesus. So I can use everyone born of a woman. I can include all of humankind, excluding Jesus. Okay. He's born of a woman, but not the same way. Yeah. Go ahead, Bill.
I understand that death is a part of being born. But I'm not getting how the innocent are accounted as having sinned.
Because you wouldn't die unless you were counted as a sinner. Yeah, unless you were accounted to be a sinner. That doesn't make you a person who has committed sin, but you're treated that way. In the legal system, you're accounted as a sinner. That's why you die. Now, we'll see the good news, because this is what Paul is really wanting to say. I'm telling you about the good news. It was possible for God to say that people who had not sinned could be counted as sinners. And that means it's possible for God to say people who didn't make a sacrifice like Jesus are counted as righteous. So I can extend, because I can extend the consequence of sin, I can extend the consequence of sacrifice. And that's what the Jews and the Greeks at that time had to learn. That I get to be counted righteous, not because of anything I have done. That would be old law system. I get to be counted righteous because of what God did. That's the righteousness that comes from God. Okay? So let's think about Jesus and what happened when Jesus died on the cross. What's the natural consequence? They nailed Jesus to the cross. What's a natural consequence of that? He died. Right? Just like thousands of other people who were nailed to crosses by Romans died. Just like the two that were crucified with him, the two thieves. They both died. Jesus died. That's the natural consequence of being nailed on a cross. Okay? So that natural consequence was there. But what's the legal consequence of that? Yeah, God can extend his death as a sacrifice for me. That's Paul's real point. And he has to reason with the Jews so that they'll understand that this is the way it happened in the past. This is the way it's going to happen now. Yeah, Bill.
And because we can't do the same thing because we're not perfect, we have to die in baptism to become part of Jesus' death.
Right. That's how we associate ourselves with that sacrifice. That's right. That's right. But without Jesus' death, getting in the water back here is not going to do a blasted thing. It's just going to make you wet. But with Jesus' death, this becomes effective. If this didn't associate you with what Jesus did, it wouldn't mean anything. His death is my sacrifice. And I didn't make one.
This now, is kind of like the old law. They sacrificed lambs for sin, and he is the Lamb of God, and he was sacrificed for all of us.
That's true. But in the old law, the general principle of sacrifice is if you sin, you sacrifice. Now, there were some exceptions to that. There was the Day of Atonement where the high priest made sacrifice for the sins of the people. The high priest made sacrifices on limited numbers of other occasions that were for the sins of the people. But the general principle of sacrifice in the Old Testament was you sin, you make a sacrifice. We talked about David. I won't make a sacrifice of something that cost me nothing. Yeah, go ahead. I stepped on somebody.
I just said I got it, what you said. I was just thinking of him as the Lamb of God. He's pure without sin, and he died for our sins, like you said.
Right. Right. The Jews didn't want to accept that. The Jews wanted to say, you have to make a sacrifice. It's true, Jesus is the Lamb that died for your sins, but you have to make a sacrifice too. And Paul is saying, no, it's not Jesus plus something. It's Jesus by himself. His death is the sacrifice that I needed to be accounted righteous. Okay? Now, you do have some cases in the Old Testament where people were accounted righteous even before Jesus died. That's not a problem for God, because God counts you righteous based on him knowing that Jesus is dying. Okay? You're just like Jesus, when he celebrated the Lord's Supper with the disciples, said, take, eat, this is my body, which is broken for you. Take this fruit of the vine, which is my shed blood. It hadn't been shed at that point, but Jesus could speak like it was. He's not bound by time, nor is God. The problem comes when God counts Abraham righteous, and Abraham says, how can I be righteous? I don't have a sacrifice. And God says, that's okay. I know that the sacrifice is out there, so I'll count you righteous. And then Satan comes along and he says, yeah, right. God's just counting you righteous because he's unrighteous himself. Remember we talked about that in the third chapter? That's how Satan gets a hold of us. He convinces us that we didn't make the sacrifice. And we didn't, but God did. Okay. Other thoughts?
I was just going to add that that was precisely what chapter 4 was about. It was this whole sacrifice of Abraham, or the promise of Abraham, was made not in the future tense, but in the present. God treated that promise of Jesus and his sacrifice as though it was occurring right when Abraham was.
Yes.
The God it was. The God 2,000 years, 1,500 years later, doesn't matter. It was in God's mind, it can happen. And he can make that promise to Abraham, saying, yeah, because the God will happen.
And we're so blessed because we can look back and say, yeah, Jesus died. The sacrifice was made. How good is that? Satan's biggest tool is deception. And God takes that out of the way when he lets Jesus die. That's why Jesus came here to die, so we can see it. Jesus could have died up in heaven. That would have been perfectly good. And again, that's speculation. I shouldn't do that. But Jesus, I don't know. I can't say that that's why Jesus died on earth. But it makes sense to me. Okay? He came here to die so I could see it, so that I didn't have to say, I'm just relying on the promise of God. I'm relying on the promise of God that he's made good on. So that's why Jesus' death is so important. Now, remember in this entire chapter, he talks about not as the sin of one man was the sacrifice of one man. In some senses, it's not like what happened to Adam. What happened to Adam was physical death. What Jesus brought is spiritual life. But the principle of being accounted righteous is the same, whether we're talking about physical death or we're talking about spiritual life. And someone had asked a question, I think it was Kirsten, about where did Satan come from? And I, again, it seems to me that when Adam sinned, the reality of God, who is a spirit, was somehow closed off. And after Adam was able to walk in the garden and talk with God, after that point, we couldn't see God anymore, or we would die. And I know that that's a bit of speculation. It's just something that you can think about, something that you can consider. I'm sorry?
I mean, I know where to get this. Like,
how would Noah fit in this whole picture?
Right. I mean, God like trying to see the genealogy and from that seven build.
I think as I read the story of Noah, the thing that impresses me most is the statement that the thoughts and intents of man's heart became only evil continually. So there was a slow degeneration that happened. Adam was cast out of the garden, but I think there was still a part of Adam that knew about God and regretted his decision. And then you get to the time of Noah, and it seems like people who are cast out of the garden, who are suffering death, they just don't think about God at all. It's like they've put him completely out of their mind. Like he says in the first couple of chapters of Romans, they did not like to retain God in their knowledge, so God gave them over to a reprobate mind. They just degenerated. And I think the flood was a response to man becoming so degenerate that God wanted to bring them back. God has always wanted man to come back. And it says it repented God that he had made man. How bad do you have to get? It's like repenting about that's becoming so bad that your own mother would say, "I'm sorry I ever gave birth to him." You have to get really bad to get to that point. But that's one of the things that happened in the first couple of chapters of Romans. We give up that which is a natural affinity for God, and we do something that's like that just can't be imagined. And I realize that some of this is speculation. I think there's a difference between just idle speculation and necessary speculation. I think part of this is necessary making sense of the apostles' argument here in Romans 5. Other questions? I know that this is kind of a deep concept, and in some senses, you don't have to understand all of this to appreciate what God did letting Jesus die. But I think if we appreciate this, then we begin to see Jesus' death more completely. And I think that's what Paul is doing here in Romans. Now, if you're reading through L.A. Mott's section that deals with this part of Romans 5, you'll find that Mott deals with a lot of the connecting issue that's in Paul's argument, the grammar of the connections, and talks about how all of these things, I think the grammar of the connections leads to this, but the grammar of the connections is a little, if you think this was hard to understand, the grammar of all those propositions and prepositions is even worse. So I would invite you, if you get a chance, to read through Mott's thinking through Romans, because he does this from a grammar kind of argument. And I'm trying to do it a little bit visually, because I think this is easier. It's easier for me.